Well, we're celebrating the 100th anniversary of Norman Borlaug. He was born in 1914. And he, of course, is known as a champion of the Green Revolution. And we, CIMMYT, thinks very much about the future and about the conditions we're going to be facing and the demand that's going to be there. And so we want to take this occasion, and it'll really kick in with the Borlaug 100 event, about, you know, looking a bit at the past, but really thinking about the future. What do we need, the kind of technologies, the kind of thinking, the kind of changes we need to get the quantum jump in productivity that's going to be needed for the 9 to 9.5 billion people who are going to be consuming like 12 billion people of today, how we're going to have the productivity there, and actually do it on less land than today, with less labor, more efficiently, less water per kilo, all of that. And it's going to take some, we're going to have to really invest. But there are technologies that can get us there. Changes in photosynthesis, hybrid wheat. We have to look at GMO wheats. There are some technologies there that can help. Water use efficient, nitrogen use efficient, drought tolerant, heat tolerant, insect resistant, rust disease resistant. And the tools are there to do that. The genomics, the phenomics, they're coming in now. They're beginning to be applied. The double haploid technology to wheat breeding that can help us start stacking together the traits that can get us to where we want to go.
Is there still some resistance around the world, though, for some of that technology, such as GMO?
Yes, there is. And, you know, GMO is something where you need to have a good regulatory agency to evaluate technologies. But I think once they are proven to be safe, and they should be tested extensively to be sure of that. But once they are, we need to bring some of these in. For example, if we can modify the photosynthetic efficiency of wheat, and it takes a change in the Rubisco molecule to make that happen, and we can get 50% more productivity, and we can do less damage to the environment if we can, you know, get more productivity per hectare. It's, you know, many people who are working in this area have a green, ecological-minded way of thinking, that they want to have less impact on the environment of agriculture. That's can be their motivation in many cases. We need everyone to think about this. We need rigorous scrutiny to make sure these things are safe. But once, you know, we've really tested everything about them, we need to move them forward for the environment, for our children, you know, for this earth. We need to be sustainable.
Are these some of the questions and answers that are being raised at the summit this week in Obregon?
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, we're not going to get seriously into GMO technology, for example, but we are going to be, you know, bringing forward, there's going to be a very important announcement of a new plan, of a new program that Australia is even contributing to improve the photosynthetic efficiency of wheat. And you're going to hear a very exciting announcement about that, which I don't want to jump the gun on, but stay tuned for that tomorrow.
Another big excitement this week is that the World Food Prize is awarding the Norman Borlaug Medallion to CIMMYT. How stoked are you about that?
No, that's very exciting. And, I mean, Borlaug spent, you know, most of his career here. He was on the payroll of CIMMYT till the day he died. This place right here, this CIMMYT research location, is where he wanted his ashes placed, because this is where his heart is. We're very excited about that. Norman Borlaug created the World Food Prize, so it's very heartwarming that it's coming back to the place that where he spent so much time. And I, you know, CIMMYT is a mission. It's a team. It's and I really see it as a nice recognition of the team we've created here that is doing so much, and it, which includes many Australians and includes a lot of funding from Australian donors like ACIAR and GRDC.
And how much funding from Australia does go into CIMMET?
We have, I think we have currently on the books about $40 million Australian in grants over a number of years, probably the 3 to 5 years. And especially we have a very exciting project that includes Australian universities and labs called Simlessa for legumes and corn in Eastern Africa, seven countries. And a lot of work on cropping systems in that, bringing zero tillage, conservation tillage into those programs, or into those countries. It's those kinds of things that are we're very excited about. And we have a lot of Australians working for CIMMET historically and at present that bring unique skills, including in wide crosses of bringing wild relatives, the traits from wild relatives into wheat to give us the features we need for the future.
How will the Australian farmer benefit from the research that CIMMET is doing around the world?
The Australian farmer will hopefully is getting varieties, sometimes directly without even local adaptation, varieties that are higher yields, that are more water use efficient, more nitrogen use efficient. Those are coming, those will be coming, and of course disease resistance. I mean, we're stacking together slow rusting traits right now that are more durable, much more durable than the dominant traits we've used in the past, the single dominant traits.
When it comes to climate change, how significant does CIMMET see climate change and the need to recognize it in your current and future research?
Well, I think the wheat, wheat is often grown in marginal areas of where many other crops wouldn't grow or very few crops would grow. They're difficult. They're either too dry, too hot, too saline conditions. And so you make those a little worse with climate change, and even wheat can drop out. And so we're very frightened about, very concerned about the demand that's going to be there by 2050 and the environmental conditions that we need to produce the crops, particularly wheat, under at that time. And so we're trying to plan ahead and get out in front on this, on varieties that don't shut down when they're trying to fill the grain because of high temperature at grain filling, at varieties that will reduce the nitrification of the fertilizer in the soil so that we get double the efficiency out of the fertilizer we're applying to the soil, that we'll use less than 1,000 kilos of water to produce 1 kilo of wheat, that maybe we can do it with 700 or 500 kilos of water. So those kinds of improvements we're working on, and Australia will definitely benefit from those.
How significant is the research CIMMET is doing in terms of ensuring that ensuring food security by 2015?
Well, CIMMET is, we're a team, and we're a team at CIMMET, but we're also a global team of collaborators and cooperators around the world that Australia is very much a part of and plays actually quite a leading role in it. Even our board member, our board chairman is from Australia. And so I think we are crucial in linking the world. We can get across borders. We can get into laboratories that you can't do on a bilateral basis. I can go into, a laboratory in North Korea. I can go into, places where it would be difficult. I can get into Monsanto laboratories, into Bayer laboratories. We have agreements with them. We move intellectual property between the public and private sector. We move seeds between countries and around the world in ways that legal ways and cooperative ways that would be almost impossible for a single country or a single laboratory to do.
If we take a look at the celebrations tomorrow, 100 years marking the birth of Norman Borlaug, how significant was he? We know he was quite significant, the leader of the Green Revolution. Could you give me a little bit of a background on him and his work here?
Well, if you can let me actually get a little personal. My mother was born 5 months after him on a wheat farm in South Dakota. She instilled in me the importance and the whole culture around it and thinking around it and an attitude of coming off of on a wheat farm. And so I initially met Borlaug in 1983 when I was a young professor. And then I taught about him for 20 years as a professor teaching courses. And Washington State University, where I came from, is where the semi-dwarf wheats that Borlaug used came from. So there had been a close tie. So I was very much pre-programmed to think about him and to respond to him and be impressed by him before, you know, I came here to Summit. But there's no one in the world who compares with him in stature. And it's one of the great, you know, things that's missing in the world right now is a recognized global champion on food issues. When he was there, I mean, sometimes the presidents of the World Bank would speak out and promote world food security. Presidents would do it. But now we don't have that. We don't see the president of the KIM coming forward and talking about world food security. We don't see Obama coming forward, our prime ministers doing that. We get some of this kind of recognition in South Asia and India. You know, I get invited right into the agriculture minister's office. But in the developed world, there's no focus on it now. They've lost interest or they don't recognize it. And I think that's very short-sighted. It's food, you know, we say that for 90% of history, 90% of people were hungry. And it'll come back again, and despite the great, you know, advances we've made. We have to stay on top of this all the time, keep a pulse on it, and try to stay out in front of it.
And so why don't you think there is a Norman Borlaug of this time?
Well, there wasn't a Norman Borlaug before him either. It was serendipitous. He had a product that he'd made here in Mexico for Mexico that just by chance happened to fit a famine situation just at a time when they were going to close the program here. Rockefeller said, job done, we succeeded, food security in Mexico. And then they realized that, you know, this had global application. And so he was fortunate. He was the person, the right person at the right time. I wish we had someone like him. I don't know how such a person could emerge in today's world. There's just, you know, he was a human. He had his faults. And those would really be picked up, you know, he would be picked apart for some of those today and discredited. But yeah, so it's such a public world today that I'm not sure someone can arise. I hope someone can. We've got to get leaders talking about agriculture. We've got to get, you know, prime ministers in Australia to take a stand on GMOs. And bring other prime ministers and presidents in around the world that let's make science-based decisions. If you are critical of them, give us the scientific, you know, reason for that, and we'll investigate it. But if it's just, I'm uncomfortable with it. Well, people were uncomfortable with grafted trees 150 years ago. There was a big movement to ban those. 500 years ago, people were uncomfortable about bringing in Arabic numerals to replace Roman numerals, that this was the work of the devil to bring in the zero. You know, technology, we have to look at it, evaluate it, and if we can't prove that it's bad, and especially if it helps us reduce impact on the environment, makes us more sustainable, it needs to be really looked at.
100 years, given your history and your admiration, maybe you saw Norman Borlaug as a bit of a mentor. You've ended up here as the director of CIMMET. How are you going to feel on his birthday?
I'm going to have a big smile. Norm, he knew me when I took this job. And he told me, he said, Tom, I'm relying on you to rebuild CIMMET. It had gone into a steep decline in the early 2000s. The previous DG, Masa Iwanaga, he was able to stop that decline and stabilize CIMMET, get it on a firm financial base. But it was small. It had really, you know, been harmed and shrunk. And so when I came on, and it was right when the food crisis hit in 2008, prices, you know, jumped through the roof. He was there, and he asked me to, you know, to take on the task, and I told him I would. And it's been gratifying, you know, to be able to bring on the team members who've made it happen. I don't claim credit for having done it, but I will claim credit for hiring some of the people who did make it happen, and some of those are Australians.
And so you're actually in this role because of him.
Well, he didn't select me, but I was certainly drawn to it, like a moth to a flame, perhaps, because of the programming my mother had given me and reading about him and teaching about him during my life, yeah.
And was he concerned before he died about the food crisis and the future?
Oh, he's very much concerned. He was very much concerned about food. He was very much concerned about sustainability, damage to the environment. I mean, he talked about the more productivity we have, the less forest we have to cut down, the less virgin land we have to clear. So, no, he was an environmentalist, very much also.